Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about what's happening in Ukraine from a somewhat different perspective. Before the Holocaust, there were over 2.7 million Jews in Ukraine. The vast majority of them were murdered during the Holocaust. And so there were 850,000 Jews left after the Holocaust. Roughly 850,000 Jews left. So more than two-thirds of the Jews in Ukraine were murdered during the Holocaust. And then, eventually, the vast majority of those Ukrainian Jews left Ukraine when there was an opportunity to immigrate in the 1990s and after the 1990s. So today there are only 67,000 Jews left in Ukraine. Let's remember that Ukraine supported the Nazis in the Holocaust, in World War II. The Ukrainians were fanatic supporters of Hitler and Nazi Germany. They greeted Hitler and Nazi Germany. They fought with Hitler and Nazi Germany. And the Ukrainian Nazis murdered hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian Jews. And the protesters today that you see protesting against the president of Ukraine, and they want to put in a new president, and they've just installed a new president. Those protesters are violently anti-Semitic. Those are protesters that glorify Ukraine's Nazi history, and Ukraine has a history of hundreds of years of violent anti-Semitism, pogroms, mass murder, blood libels, culminating in the Holocaust. And now the violent anti-Semites are taking power in Ukraine. How are they going to express this violent anti-Semitism? Only time will tell. But I think one of the reasons why we have this crisis is because Hashem, because God, wants to push Jews out of the galut, out of the exile, and send them back to the land of Israel. And Ukraine might be one of the places where God is doing something that will push the Jews out of Ukraine and push them back to Israel. I'm not saying that's the only reason you have the events that are going on there. This is something that has been simmering for a long time, the hatred and the resentment between the Russians and the Ukrainians, and the Russians who live in Ukraine as opposed to those who are anti-Russian in Ukraine. It's a resentment that goes back many, many years, centuries in fact. But I do believe that what happens to Jews in various countries is something that affects history and something that affects the destiny of those countries. I think that Hashem sometimes pushes nations in a particular direction in order to get his people out. So it's just one of the things to think about when we look at the events unfolding in Ukraine. Many of the Jews there are very nervous, and some of them are speaking about leaving, about making Aliyah. So that may be one of the end results here. You know, the anti-Semitism, the violent anti-Semitism in France, for instance, because you have huge numbers of Muslims living in France, and the French generally have a long history of anti-Semitism. This violent anti-Semitism that we've seen in France for years now has created a big French-Jewish aliyah. Thousands of French Jews have been moving to Israel because of this. Baruch Hashem, thank God. And we see the same thing happening in other countries, like Argentina, where there was a lot of anti-Semitism, where the economy collapsed. Many Argentinian Jews moved to Israel because of that. And in South Africa, of course, the fact that the white-run regime there, where the Jews live very well, collapsed and fell, and now you have the black-majority regime, which is very anti-Semitic, caused many Jews to leave South Africa. So this is a worldwide phenomenon in many countries. Of course, there are many countries like the United States where something like this is not happening. And tragically, when Jews remain outside of Israel, we know the results, assimilation, intermarriage, Jews begin to disappear, and they engage in the type of self-hating behavior that all of us in the United States are witness to. Look at how over 70% of the Jews voted for Barack Hussein Obama, and look at all the other insane Jewish behavior that we see. So we see the tragic consequences when Jews don't go to the land of Israel. But I just wanted you to keep in mind, when you look at what's happening in Ukraine, that that might be one of the things that God is doing. I just want to briefly say also, as we have been updating you all the time, you know, we are continuing to grow on Facebook, especially the Hebrew movement. The Hebrew Facebook page is becoming more impressive every week. People follow what we say on the Hebrew Facebook page now. Things that we post on the Hebrew Facebook page now wind up being posted on dozens of pages all across Facebook. In fact, it's come to the point where our Facebook Hebrew administrators are now putting our insignia on every picture they post now, because the Hebrew Facebook administrators, who are doing a fantastic job, they've been posting comments and articles and information there, sometimes several times a day. I mean, they're very actively updating people, so it's a place where people go to for information and for news, because there are frequent updates and all types of new information that you get there. And so many Israeli Jews are going there to the Hebrew page. It's much more active than the English Facebook page. I wish the English Facebook page would be as active, and hopefully eventually it will be. But it's growing. It's growing. By the way, the English Facebook page also is growing to a certain extent, the number of likes we have, but nothing compared to what's happening on the Hebrew pages. It's just something that I find encouraging, something that I think is an encouraging development. Let's hope it continues, and kol hakavod, and yishar koach, more power to all the wonderful admins and the great people in the Hebrew forum and on the Hebrew Facebook page that are making that happen. Of course, I know that our great JTFers want us to reach and awaken people, and with your help, we can do that. And so, once again, I urge you, help us when we put up Hebrew and English videos. And that means like, comment, favorite, share, and mirror those videos. It helps us in the search engines, and it helps promote the videos. Also, help us with our forums and help us with our Facebook pages. Good posts, good threads. These are things that attract people to the movement and that make them want to become more involved. The bigger our movement becomes, the more active our movement is, the more exposure we get on the search engines, the better it is. Last but not least, certainly not least, in fact, most importantly, you know that our downfall is that we don't have a big enough budget to do what we would like to do. If we had a big enough budget, we would definitely be a mass movement and we could change history very quickly. So checks, money orders, cash donations sent to the post office box, that can make a big difference. Every donation, every contribution helps. So we urge our great JTFers who are helping us to continue doing so. God bless the great JTFers who are helping us on a regular basis. If you're not doing so, please do so. Your generous support does make a difference. It really does help. And if you don't want to send a letter in the mail, if you don't feel like making out a check or a money order or sending a cash donation in the mail, you can always do it by credit card online, very conveniently with our Donate Now button on our Hebrew main page and on our English main page. Okay, let's get to our great questions from our great JTFers. And we start off with our friend Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, did AIDS originate in sub-Saharan Africa?" Unquote. Yes, I think it did. Yes, I think it did. There are theories that it's because the black Africans in sub-Saharan Africa were eating green monkeys raw and were drinking the blood of the green monkeys, that they weren't cooking the flesh, they were eating it raw. That's one of the things that caused AIDS, because the AIDS virus does not hurt the green monkeys, but it's deadly, of course, in human beings. And there are other various indications that it did indeed come from sub-Saharan Africa. One of the ways that it spread to the United States is when the Castro dictatorship sent Cuban soldiers to fight in African wars. Cuban communist soldiers were sent to fight in African wars in the 1970s. And some of them, when they were there, contracted AIDS from engaging in sexual activity and also from perhaps from drug use and shared needles. So some of the Cubans came back and they were infected with AIDS. And they then spread this to other people in the Caribbean, and eventually it came to the United States. That's another theory that some scientists and some researchers have been expounding. In addition to that, we know that the remains of people who passed away in Africa in the 1950s, for instance, were found, and they were found to be HIV positive. They were tested, and they have people who were found in the 1950s to have been HIV positive in Africa at a time when in the Western world we didn't know of the AIDS disease. This was something that was not afflicting Western countries at the time. So the preponderance of the evidence does indicate that this is another one of those wonderful things that came out of Black Africa. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And now we go to our friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what is your favorite Passover tradition? Oh, I love a lot of things about Passover. I think the thing I love the most is probably reading the Haggadah. The Haggadah is the book that we read, where we read about what happened on Pesach, on Passover. And I just love the story, and I love everything about it. I think it's such a magnificent, uplifting story. And my favorite part is indeed reading about what happened to our fathers, to our ancestors in ancient Egypt. Thank you, Joe Gutfeld. And we now move to the great Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, discuss the Tuskegee Airmen and Buffalo Soldiers, unquote. Let's start with that. These are the black, these black units who are now being glorified for what they supposedly did in World War II, which I believe is complete baloney. I do not believe that black soldiers played an important role in American victories in World War II. I don't believe it. I don't believe they were effective fighters. I don't believe that they're good in war. I don't believe that they're good in warfare. I think they're undisciplined in most cases. I'm not saying all. Of course, there are exceptions. But generally speaking, I think black soldiers are undisciplined. I don't think that they're brave. And I don't think they're effective fighters because they're not well educated and they don't know how to operate equipment properly. So, I don't believe all the ridiculous stories that are coming out that are suddenly turning them into the heroes. Before you know it, we're going to be told that they won the war. We're going to be told that the black soldiers won the war in World War II, when in fact they had virtually no effect on the outcome of the war. And now Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks writes, and I quote, the Negro imam that died in jail of HIV. Well, I met many black prisoners when I was, during the 5.5 years that I was in prison for the bombings that I did to save Soviet Jewry. I met many black prisoners who were HIV positive. And I saw people die of AIDS. A number of people die of AIDS in prison, including some who claimed to be religious Muslims, religious black Muslims. Of course, these are, Muslim wannabes. They're complete morons without any education, just human filth who suddenly say, I'm Muslim. Yeah, I'm a Muslim brother. Mm-hmm. Just scum, pure scum. And I saw some of them contract AIDS and they died of AIDS. Some of it was because of homosexual activity. Some of it was sharing of needles because they were drug addicts. They were intravenous drug users. And sometimes it was both. And now Lewinsky Stinks writes, and I quote, the dishonorable Elijah Muhammad. Well, Elijah Muhammad became the head of the so-called Nation of Islam, or the Black Muslims. He was the predecessor to Louis Farrakhan. And he always used to give speeches referring to all whites as devils and saying that all whites are going to be exterminated. Just a hideous, ignorant, hateful, ugly, vile individual. And the people who were his followers were just as ugly and vile and ignorant and hideous as he was. And now Lewinsky Stinks writes, and Cynthia McKinney. Cynthia McKinney was a congresswoman from a black district in Georgia, predominantly black district in Georgia, who made openly anti-Semitic remarks and anti-Semitic and anti-Israel statements and speeches. Her father, when she was defeated for re-election, said the Jews were behind her defeat. And you know, she was just a typical hideous person. Then she became a 9/11 so-called truther, you know, where she started claiming that there was a conspiracy, that the Arab Muslim Nazi terrorists are not responsible for 9/11, that it was really a conspiracy. Just typical. I mean, just a typical, hideous, racist, anti-Semitic, lowlife of the worst type who was elected to Congress. And it was part of the Congressional Black Caucus and highly respected by the news media. Just typical of American black leadership today. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And now we go to our friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, one, was the Whig Party a good political party, unquote. Binyamin, I don't know enough to say. I don't know enough to say about it. I know it's disappointing sometimes when I have to answer that way, but I don't want to give an answer based on ignorance. And now Binyamin writes, two, Thomas Jefferson was an anti-federalist. Was it good that he opposed the Constitution, unquote? Again, I'm not familiar enough with what his reasoning was. I know that he was the main author of the Declaration of Independence in 1776. He was the principal author of the Declaration of Independence, which was probably the founding document that led to the creation of the United States of America. And I know that he had to uphold the Constitution when he became president. He was president for 2 terms. He was president for 8 years. He was the 3rd president of the United States. He certainly had to uphold the Constitution when he took office. What his position was before the Constitution was ratified and before, when all of these issues were being debated, before all of this became accepted law, I don't know. I don't know what his reasoning was, but I certainly think that he contributed greatly to making the United States the nation that it eventually became. I think that he was one of the great presidents of the United States. Thank you, Binyamin Yisrael. And now we go to the great Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, comments, one, Danish zoo murdered giraffe, fed it to lions in front of kids, unquote. Yeah, well, this really shows what hypocrites these so-called left-wing, animal-loving, socialist, Scandinavian humanitarians are. You know, they're so anti-Israel and so anti-Semitic. And so anxious to outlaw kosher slaughter, but they'll allow a giraffe to be torn to shreds by lions, which is the most painful possible death that you could have. Lions ripping your skin off your body and killing you by ripping your skin off your body violently. But kosher slaughter they want to outlaw. So, another little example of the hypocrisy of these so-called enlightened socialist European countries. And now Smash Islam writes, too, comments on Justin Bieber arrest. Justin Bieber, I think he's 19 years old, if I'm not mistaken. And he has been arrested more than once, I believe now, for possession of marijuana. He also, of course, has been found to be drinking frequently. He drinks, he smokes pot all the time. He goes to brothels and goes with prostitutes when he visits Central American and South American countries, you know, he is really turning into a catastrophe, a walking disaster. He's such a stupid kid and was always such a stupid, talentless kid. And now he's self-destructing, which was predictable. This is someone with no morals, no guidance, no direction, just ego and money and emptiness. So what do you expect? Now Smash Islam writes, 3, Kardashian family, Bruce Jenner sex change attempt, unquote. Oh, I don't know if Bruce Jenner was really intending to undergo a sex change. I know he was going to get some sort of operation, some sort of surgery. You know, I don't remember now what that was. I mean, I remember seeing, I think I saw an article in the New York Post about it. I don't remember exactly what it was, the procedure that Bruce Jenner was going to undergo, but it was a procedure that often eventually leads to a sex change. And so there were rumors that he wanted to get a sex change, which he denies. I don't know. All I know is that whole family and just the all reality TV, such scum. What a depraved, horrible example of where American culture and Western culture has descended. Thank you, Smash Islam. And now we go to our friend Yotin, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please tell us about the Nephilim of Bereshit chapter 6, Bereshit being the book of Genesis. From what I hear, fallen angels somehow bred with women and produced giants, unquote. Yotin, actually, the Jewish view of angels is that they're spiritual beings. So in the Jewish view, you wouldn't have a situation where there'd be fallen angels and they'd be able to have sexual intercourse with human beings and physical activity like that. Angels have no parents. They do not reproduce. They do not engage in those types of activities. They're completely spiritual. They're just spiritual beings, and they only do what God commands them to do. They do not go against the will of God. They completely follow God's will. They are not like human beings. Human beings have free will. They can make choices. Angels cannot make choices. Angels must do only what God commands them to do. They're programmed to do what God commands them to do. They are not the same type of creatures that we are. We can choose between good and evil. Angels only do good, which means doing God's will. So the Nephilim, they were human beings. They were human beings, probably a tribe of big people, of very big people, like the Watusis in Africa, except these were Middle Eastern people, and you may have had a tribe of very large people for whatever reason, and they fell, and they eventually had a downfall and were either eliminated or assimilated or expelled. Who knows? Thank you, Yotin, and now we go to our friend Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, during Purim, when our ancestors rose against those who wanted to murder Jews and killed over 75,000 of them, did any Jews die in the fighting, unquote. I'm not sure that that's clear, Tag Mechir. From what we read in Megillat Esther, I don't think it's clear. You don't see in Megillat Esther any mention of Jewish casualties, and at the same time, sometimes when there aren't any casualties, it will specifically say in a battle that no, that the Jews all returned safely and that no one was killed. And so we don't see either it's saying that all the Jews were safe and nobody was killed, nor do we see any mention of Jewish casualties. So I don't know that it's clear. I don't think it's entirely clear. Certainly a large number of Jews weren't killed, because that, I think, would have been mentioned. But I think so, at least. But I don't think it's clear if this was something in which there were no casualties, which, of course, we've had wars like that. We had wars like that in biblical times, and we had wars like that in post-biblical times. So I just don't think we know for sure. As far as I know, maybe you can find a source or cite a source that will enlighten all of us, myself included. Thank you, Tag Mechir. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "One, talk about the Ukraine situation. What outcome do you hope for?" Unquote. Okay, I spoke about Ukraine in my opening, Dr. Dan, and I was speaking basically about the Jewish community there and the implications involving the Jewish community. One outcome that I do hope for is that all the Jews there that are not self-hating Jews and that are not traitors make Aliyah and go to Israel. I also do not wish the best for the Ukrainian people. They're an evil people with the blood of huge numbers of Jews on their hands from the Holocaust and even before the Holocaust. Huge numbers of Jews were murdered in the Ukraine over the years. Vicious anti-Semitism, violent haters of the Jewish people. To this day, just the neo-Nazis and the hatred and the blaming of the Jews for the situation in Ukraine. Even though the vast majority of Jews in Ukraine already were slaughtered by them. You just have a small Jewish community of 67,000 Jews with virtually no influence anymore. And there's still people there blaming the Jews for everything that happens. So, you know, I do not love the murderous enemies of my people. I believe they should get what they want to do to the Jews and what they've always done to the Jews. It should only happen to them. So that's what I'd like to see happen. I'd like to see them kill each other. And I'd like to see all the animals who murder Jews all these years, I'd like to see it happen to them. I want to see justice against those who murdered the Jewish people and who hated the Jewish people. So as far as I'm concerned, let the chaos and civil war continue. Dr. Dan now writes, "2, is Moshe Feiglin genuinely righteous in your eyes? Can he help get into Israel?" Unquote. I do think Moshe Feiglin is a good Jew. I have some differences with him on some issues, but I do think he's a good Jew. In my opinion, he's sincere, and in my opinion, he's a good Jew. And I have tactical differences with him, too, about some of the ways that he's doing things. But again, I believe he's sincere. I don't believe he's like these political phonies that you usually have in politics, not only in Israel, in America, everywhere. Politicians usually are phonies. I don't think Moshe Feiglin is a phony. I really don't think so. Can he help me get into Israel? If he could, he would. He has offered to help me. And I've met with him and I've spoken to him and he's always said that he'll do whatever he can to help me. But he doesn't have the power to get me into Israel. He does not have that power right now. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But unfortunately, he is not a very powerful figure. It's true he's a member of the Knesset, but he's pretty isolated within the Likud party and within the Knesset. So, Dr. Dan, we're always trying to find ways to enable me to make Aliyah. And of course, we did turn to Moshe Feiglin in the past, and he always said that he would be happy to help. But unfortunately, he doesn't have the power right now to be able to get me into Israel. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to our friend LKZ, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom, blessing for Nazi Without Borders, Christopher Boylan, Yamar Shmo V'Zichro." See, the guy that's always writing about Israel and about the Zionists and the elders of Zion and everything? I think so. I mean, I know you have a link here, but I think he is, and certainly so. Absolutely, Yamar Shmo V'Zichro. May his name and memory be obliterated. And LKZ now writes, "After Mashiach, will there be technology?" Unquote. Oh, of course there will be. Of course, the Messiah himself needs the technology in order to address the world. He's going to be addressing the whole world. He needs technology to do that. I don't know if God is going to introduce his own technology to the world. But human endeavor and human technology is something that will continue to exist, of course. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think one of the views is that the Jews are going to be like the priests of the world. They're going to be a nation of priests. holy nation, a nation of priests, a light unto the nations. They're going to be living in the land of Israel. The Gentile nations, they're going to actually be running the technology, which will be a little bit of a role reversal, because nowadays the Jews are in the forefront of technology. Way out of proportion to their numbers, the Jews, even though they're such a small people, huge numbers of Jews have a huge role to play in technological advances in the world today. But in the next world, the Gentiles are going to be running those practical aspects of the world, while the Jews are going to be taking care of Israel and the spiritual aspects. At least that's one of the views of the rabbinic scholars. Thank you, LKZ. And now we go to Daniel, who writes, and I quote, "My question is, why is it that the right-wing and conservatives are adamant about climate change when there is a consensus of scientists that state that it is taking place? Science does not have political persuasion or opinion about anything. Science just simply is. So why does this issue of science have so many political implications?" Unquote. Daniel, the problem is that you're making statements that aren't true. There is not a consensus of scientists. And you know, they're calling it climate change now. They used to call it global warming. Suddenly it's climate change because we've had such a brutal winter and such a, you know, we were almost freezing to death this winter that they don't want to use the word global warming anymore. And when I was in school in the 1970s, it was global freezing. They said we were entering into an ice age and it's going to be global freezing. Then they suddenly dropped it and said, no, it's global warming. There are scientists that don't believe this. It's just not true that there's a consensus. That's not true. There are scientists that reject this. And I believe it's junk science. I mean, this does have a political agenda. The political agenda is stopping us from using clean coal and using the energy that we have to use in order to stop the Muslims from getting trillions of petrodollars, which endangers Israel's survival and endangers America's survival and endangers the survival of the whole Western world. There is a political agenda here right now and an economic agenda from big corporations who are dealing with the Saudis and other Persian Gulf countries and other Muslim countries and don't want to stop those lucrative deals and don't want to stop that lucrative trade and don't want America to produce her own energy. They want the energy to be produced there because when they deal with dictators in Saudi Arabia and Iran, they make more money than they would make if it was a free market and open competition here in the United States. So, I mean, why do people who believe in this junk science insist that we all have to believe in it? It is nonsense. It is nonsense. I do, and I happen to think that the cause of stopping us from importing oil from Muslim countries and giving the Muslims trillions of petrodollars, I think that's a very noble cause. You can call it a political cause, but it's a very noble cause, and that is one of the things that winds up happening when we accept this junk science, that the news media, which is owned and controlled by big corporations, is pushing on us, and that the left is pushing on us. Thank you, Danielle, for the question. I thank you for the question. And now we go to the great Chicago Jew who writes, and I quote, "Who is uglier, Jan Schakowsky or Nancy Pelosi?" Unquote. What a horrible choice. But I would say Jan Schakowsky. She is such a vicious, self-hating Jew. So vicious. So evil. I mean, she's ugly inside and ugly outside. So she's the one I would pick. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we now go to our friend EB22, who writes, and I quote, "What do you believe are the differences between AIPAC and J Street? Can AIPAC be weakened without helping those that claim to be to the left of AIPAC?" Unquote. EB, AIPAC is a cancer. Please don't let them use these ridiculous excuses. AIPAC is worse than J Street because AIPAC claims to be the Jewish lobby and has Orthodox Jews working with them to do their destructive work. For they openly say that they favor a so-called two-state solution, which is national suicide for Israel. They openly promote the worst policies. when there are Gentile senators who want to defend Israel and who want, for instance, to impose new sanctions on Iran, AIPAC comes out and says, no, we're against that. We want the negotiations to continue with John Kerry. There is the end result of what AIPAC wants is not better than J Street. At least with J Street, we know that it's a left-wing group of traders, and people recognize that. People at least know that what they're dealing with. AIPAC is just as bad and much worse because they're much more influential. AIPAC and J Street and all the establishment organizations have to be fought against. They are all endangering Israel's survival. Organizations that tell us that we must have foreign aid, that Israel can't survive without foreign aid, those organizations are destroying the state of Israel. Thank you, EB. And now we go to the great Main Koran, who writes, and I quote, what do you think of Saudi Arabia supplying anti-aircraft missiles to the Syrian rebels on Israel's border, unquote. I think it's very, very dangerous for Israel. I think it's very bad. Because they can, of course, they can try to shoot down Israeli planes. I think it's terrible. And it shows that Saudi Arabia is an enemy of Israel and is willing to do things that endanger Israel. I mean, they hate the Jews. You look at the way the Saudi media speaks about Jews, it's the same way that Nazi Germany did. And two, Saudi Arabia, please give your thoughts, unquote. Saudi Arabia is a Nazi country. Saudi Arabia was responsible for 9/11. They were responsible for 9/11. They actually were responsible, not just the hijackers, the terrorist hijackers. The Saudi government was behind this. They funded it and they were behind it. And then they glorified it on Saudi television after the event. They are an evil, monstrous regime that is pulling off the biggest ripoff in human history. Trillions of dollars they're stealing from people to give to several thousand princes. Saudi Arabia is not a country, it's a family business. And these bloodsuckers are destroying the whole world economy. They're stealing and robbing everybody blind. It's the biggest ripoff in world history. And then they use their trillions in oil money to spread their Wahhabi terrorist filth all over the world. So it's a horrible, evil country. A monstrously evil country. Thank you, Main Koran. And now we go to the great Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think of gold and silver as hedges against inflation, unquote. Well, if you had bet on gold and silver 30 years ago or 20 years ago, you'd be in good shape now, because people who did that made a lot of money. On the other hand, gold and silver, like anything else that you invest in it, there are risks. If the value goes down, you lose money. So you're taking chances. And by the way, you know, one thing that you always hear on these commercials for stocks, for bonds, it says past performance is no indication of future. I forgot exactly how they say it. But past performance is no indication of future performance. So it's true that usually in the past 20, 30 years, people who bet on gold and silver have done pretty well. That doesn't guarantee at all that that's going to be true for the future. So, you know, you can take a chance on it. It's like anything else that people take a chance on, whether it's the stock market or buying bonds. Those are chances. People take chances. If you want to take chances, may be a good investment. I don't know. I know that in the past, it did work out pretty well. In the past 20, 30 years, it has worked out well, even though there were periods where the value went down. But generally speaking, if you had kept it all those years, it held up fairly well. And people did make money on it. So, will it continue to hold up? It might. Are there risks involved? Of course. There's always a risk when you invest your money. I certainly am not going to make recommendations to people in that area because I can't tell the future. I'm not a prophet. So I'm not going to tell people what to do with their money when it comes to investments like that. I don't think that it would be appropriate. First of all, I don't think I'm qualified to do that. And I don't think anybody knows for sure, knows absolutely for sure. Sometimes it pays off to take somewhat of a chance, to take risks, and sometimes it doesn't. Thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to the great Kahana loyalist who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, I have noticed we are constantly making new channels on YouTube, and I believe this is making it difficult for us to get high view counts," unquote. Kahana loyalist, you hit the nail right on the head. That's exactly why we're not getting high view counts. But if you recall, you were with us in 2007 when we had two main channels on YouTube. We had one Hebrew channel and one English channel with hundreds of videos on those channels and hundreds of thousands of views on those channels. Those channels had lots of views. And YouTube took them down and we lost hundreds of videos on each channel. You remember when that was happening. That's why we've had this new system all these years. It does cut down on the number of views we get, that's true. But it gives us the cushion and the safety of knowing at least that when you use this method, YouTube, generally speaking, is not going to bother going after you if you have hundreds and hundreds of accounts, hundreds and hundreds of channels. They usually will not go after you. And in fact, more than 99% of our videos have not been removed ever since we started this method. I think, let's see now, how many years has this been? This has been more than six years we've been using this method, and they have not touched, they generally don't touch our videos. 99% of our videos have stayed up. Unfortunately, YouTube has put us in this position because of their fascistic policy of censoring anyone who dares to disagree with their politically correct, left-wing, anti-Semitic views. What can we do? That's what we're dealing with. Thank you, Kahana Loyalist. And now we go to our friend Ephraim ben Noach, who writes, and I quote, "Talk a little about the different sects during the Second Temple. Why different beliefs? Why did Essenes initiate members and follow solar calendar?" Unquote. Well, there were different groups during the Second Temple, but there was only one legitimate group that followed the written Torah and the oral Torah, and that was the Prushim, what we call in Hebrew the Prushim. They were the only one. The Prushim were the only group that were following both Torah She Bichtav, which means the written Torah, the first five books of the Bible, and Torah She Be'al Peh, which is the oral Torah. Other groups that were not legitimate groups, that were heretical groups, did come up. And the reason is because of free will, because people have the Yetzer Hara, they have the evil inclination, and they want spiritual, they want to have a spiritual experience. And so they live in a fantasy world. The Essenes wanted only spirituality without living in the physical realities of the world. The fact is, Judaism, you can't be all spiritual and you can't be all physical in Judaism. You have to be both. We live in a world where we're trying to bring holiness into this world, into the physical world. That's why the land of Israel is holy. The land of Israel is not spiritual, it's physical. There's a physical land that we have to be settling and promoting and developing. We have to build physical families, which is not a spiritual thing. That's actual physical dimension to our lives in this world. The Essenes wanted everything to be strictly spiritual. And there were other groups that had their own craziness and their own assimilationist attitudes. There were all types of groups, some of which wanted to follow even foreign cultures and idolatrous cultures. Some of them were influenced by foreign cultures. But in the end, only one group survived. There are no Essenes today. And all the other groups and all these cults that existed, they all disappeared. The only group that survived was the Prushim. The Prushim of ancient times are what practicing Jews and God-fearing Jews are today. People who follow the mitzvot, the commandments of the oral Torah and of the written Torah, of the 613 commandments, Taryag HaMitzvot, that was the Prushim. And that's what we have today. They're the only one that survived, because they were the only legitimate group that was really doing what Judaism commands. Thank you, Ephraim. And now we go to our friend Confederate Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what is your opinion of eugenics? Thanks and God bless," unquote. Well, it's something that leads to tremendous abuse. People who want to try to purify the gene pool. We saw during the Holocaust what that can lead to. It's very dangerous. It can lead to tremendous abuses. I know there are some who may argue, well, okay, but we can do it without doing what the Nazis did. Yeah, but human nature being what it is, it usually leads to abuses. So I think it's something that should generally be avoided. Thank you, Confederate Kahanist, and I want to thank everyone for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.